apps can do a lot of cool things. You could order dinner, gamble on your favorite team, and track your health. You could even get a mortgage. One click and you can be approved. I'm not sure by who or what country they're in. You deserve more from the mortgage industry. At AnyMac Home Mortgage, we believe in the need for live human interaction during a very complex process. The kind of service and guidance which an app simply can't provide. Our customers are more than credit scores and income documents. They're individuals and families who live in and strengthen our communities. Their story is our story, and that story begins in a home. Chris Sawyer is an expert on providing superior customer service and in meeting the mortgage needs of current and future home buyers. With over 18 years of experience in the industry, Chris is able to help customers migrate through the home buying and home financing process by using his wealth of knowledge as a well-qualified mortgage professional. And best of all, Chris is located in Cromwell, Connecticut, where he has helped hundreds of clients in Connecticut, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island make their dreams of home ownership a reality. Visit chrissawyer.any-mac.com. Email him at csawyer@any-mac.com or give him a call, 860-878-8730.
Chris Sawyer, NMLS number 39345, corporate NMLS number 338923, AnyMac Home Mortgage and Equal Housing Lender, American Neighborhood Mortgage Acceptance Company, LLC, DBA, AnyMac Home Mortgage, Lo-Fi Direct, Connecticut First Mortgage Correspondent, License Lender, Broker Number, ML338923, Massachusetts Mortgage Lender and Mortgage Broker License Number, MC338923, Rhode Island License Lender, License Number 20112810L. Call for additional details.
Welcome to Sports Talk with R&J. I'm Steve Risser, along here with Justin D'Onofrio. And it happened. UConn on Monday night won their sixth national championship. They won their second consecutive national championship under head coach Dan Hurley. And let me tell you, they were totally dominant. They win the tournament. They win every game by double digits once they get in the tournament. So just complete domination by the UConn Huskies. And Justin, I'll give you the floor right now. Your thoughts on UConn's run of the tournament.
Yeah, it's one of probably the most dominant run we've seen since those UCLA days and with John Wooden back in the 70s. And last year was pretty dominant as well. I saw something too, like in the last 12 NCAA tournament games, if you put $100 on UConn to cover, $100 for UConn to cover on the last 12 NCAA tournament games, you'd have $227,000, something like that. They've been a cover machine. They've blown out everybody. It's just the way they just kind of have been able to dominate the way they have. And last year they lost five of their top eight guys that led in minutes last year. And, they didn't miss a beat this year and they were even better. So, again, I said it last week, the staff's the best in the country of kind of figuring out how to build a roster for 2024. And Dan Hurley's not wired like many. That guy is an absolute lunatic. And that guy, I remember Caravan saying before the season that they asked him if Dan Hurley is lightened up on practice. He said, no, he's even tougher now that he's gotten that that taste of victory. And, again, the repeat's probably not going to happen. But with Dan Hurley, the guy's an absolute lunatic. I wouldn't be shocked because after that swoon that they went through in 2022 in January, or in 2023, he never wants that to happen again, and you could just see it. So awesome run. Again, it's just crazy to go into tournament games and I haven't been nervous since the Northwestern game. I don't even know why I was nervous for that game. It's crazy. I should have been nervous Monday, but I knew this, there was no way the team was losing to Purdue.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I didn't either. I thought the game would be close, but I definitely thought they were going to win the game. And you said it, how this team is perfectly construct a roster for 2022. They lose a Jordan Hawkins. They go out and they get Cam Spencer, who fit perfectly. Klingon and Caravan, they filled right in. Klingon, he filled right in as a starter. So did Caravan might have started last year, but he had a good year too. So getting a guy like Cam Spencer, bringing in and getting a Stephon Castle, coming in and bringing him in, and he fit at the end of the year. He fit perfectly. So yeah, you talked about how Hurley is able to construct a roster in 2024 and to make it work and to get the guys to play unselfish. I mean, he did an absolutely phenomenal job to get this team their second straight national title. But now we'll get to the game against Purdue, and the big question for us, for the big question here is why did they win this game? And I think they won it two reasons why. Newton, their best player all year, played like their best player. 20 points, 7 assists. You knew he had to have a big game because Klingon wasn't as effective. He got into foul trouble. Newton had an awesome game. He scored 20.7 assists. And also they won it. A reason why they beat Purdue was because of their defense. Their defense was outstanding. They held Purdue to a season low 60 points, held Purdue to only 1 3-point shot. I know Zach Edey had the big game, but that was the game plan. Let Zach Edey have the big game. And let the other guy see if the other guys can beat you. And that's the luxury of playing a team with a center, with the center who doesn't shoot threes as their best player. Is you could let that guy beat you, and you could let that guy have a big game and let the other guys beat you. Like, say there's a guard that's really good, like a Marcus Sears or a Terrence Shannon. You got to limit his production. You kind of did a really good job of that, especially with Terrence Shannon. You got to limit that guy's production, because if that guy has a huge game, you're going to lose. But the thing about playing against a team with a really, really good big, you could let that guy have a big game and be a scorer and see if the other guys can step up. And for Purdue, the other guys did not step up, and that's why UConn got the win.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that was my first point as well. You mentioned that, you know, UConn's ability, the game plan of just, yeah, like they were able to guard ED one-on-one. And, you know, I think I said that last week. Like, I wasn't worried about the guards because – you know, Lawyer and Smith, they're both 6'2", and or Smith 6'1", 6'2", Lawyer 6'2". So, you know, Castle 6'6", Newton 6'5", 6'6". So, you know, they weren't going to be able to get shots off. And, you know, UConn just said, all right, if Edie's going to go get his touches and points, that's fine. He's not going to put up 50 on us. Braden Smith was the only guy in Purdue to have assists. He had 8 of them. That was it. You know? So UConn did, yeah, the game plan was awesome from UConn. And they were able to kind of wear, you know, Klingon, Sam Johnson did, and Caravan, the 12 possessions, I thought did a pretty good job. And then I thought UConn did a pretty good job on the boards as well. They were able to get 14 offensive rebounds, you know, against Zach Edey and that Purdue team that's usually, you know, one of the better rebounding teams in the country. I thought they did an outstanding job in the glass. And then my last one was, you know, just the ability, UConn was able to wear down Zach Edey. Because Edey plays 39, 40 minutes, but he's not used to a Donovan Klingon being pretty much his size going up against him. So, you know, just trying to back him down, just, you know, the physicality of both of them, it wore him down. You kind of see he had an awesome first half. The second half, you know, he started to kind of get tired. He kind of tried to do what he could, but he couldn't do it all. So those are the 3 points, you know, for why UConn won that game.
Yeah. And yeah, you said it. They were able to, you know, play really good defense. Newton was able to play well, and Edey wore down. That was a big reason why UConn ended up winning their second straight national title. Now, we'll go to Purdue for a minute here. Why did they lose this game? Why did Purdue lose this game? And I think the number one reason why is their lack of 3-point. They only hit 1 3-point. And here's the puzzling thing. They only attempted 7 3-point shots. That was puzzling. 7 3-point shots. I mean, when they got down by 16 in the middle of the second half, they only cut it down to 13 because all they were doing was throwing the ball down. They were throwing the ball down to Zach Edey. They weren't shooting threes. The only way you're going to get back into a basketball game in 2024 is if you shoot threes. They made 1 3, but even worse, they attempted 7. That is not a formula to win anything in basketball in 2024. That's why I did not think this was one of Matt Painter's best games, because Purdue should have shot more threes. I'm sitting there watching the game like, what? As a UConn fan, you're saying, you'll take it. Just keep throwing it to Edey. Keep throwing it to Edey. Keep letting them score these twos. They're not going to come back this way. To me, that was the most puzzling thing from Purdue. They only attempted 7 threes. I think that was a big reason why they lost that game. And also, guys around Edey clearly didn't step up. I know Braden Smith had 12, but did Fletcher Lawyer or Lance Jones even play the game? They were awful. They were really bad. So Purdue, the other guys did not step up at all around Zach Edey, and attempting 7 3-point shots, that's not going to beat UConn. That is not going to beat UConn. I don't know what they were thinking. Alabama had a great game plan. They had the game plan to beat UConn. I guarantee you, if they won that game, they probably would have won the national championship. So they had a great game plan. Matt Painter and Purdue did not have a good game plan at all. in this game. And you saw the fact they were able to hit three-point shots all year. It was puzzling they only attempted seven.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. That was my one, too. They made zero adjustments. You know, they just kept saying, all right, let's just dump it off to Edie. And because they're so used to teams double-teaming Edie, it just passing it out and finding the open guy. But again, you have a 7-2 diamond cleaning. And even when they didn't, even when Samson Johnson was in there, they didn't really double. They let him go one-on-one because they knew the two-point basket wasn't going to kill him because they did get up. So none of those guys could – the other guys, Lance Jones, Braden Smith, Frost Aloy, really couldn't get open and do much. So, this Purdue just made zero adjustments to try to get those guys any open shots. My other point was the bench. They really haven't had much bench production all year. They didn't get it all. I think they had 4 points off the bench from – you know, they had, three or four guys kind of come in to play some 5 to 10 minutes, a little bit more than that. But their benches did not do anything Monday night. And then this point, too, you kind of mentioned it as well. You know, Smith, Lawyer, and Lance Jones, they did not help out Edie at all. I think Smith had 12 points, I believe.
12 points.
Yeah, Brady Smith had 12, but he was 4 from 12. You know, he wasn't really efficient. Lloyd didn't even score, and Lance Jones he had 5 points as well. So those guys really struggled. They couldn't really help out Edie at all. And that was a huge key, we mentioned it too, the UConn thing. That's what UConn wanted. Like, let Edie get his points and make sure nobody else beats you.
Yeah, because, a lot of teams would double him early on. He'd kick it out, and then their guards would hit threes. This game, UConn, I love the game plan Hurley had. Just let him score. Just let him have a big game. Just let him score 35, 40 points. Usually you don't do that to a team's best player. But in 2024, when your best player is a big, that's a risk you could take. And it definitely paid off for UConn.
Yeah, but absolutely did. Because Purdue was second in the country this year in three-point field goal percentage. They're 40%. Like, it's not like this team, this team is one of the best three-point shooting teams in the country. And, Smith and Lawyer have been great from beyond the arc. Lance Jones has been pretty good as well. And, yeah, to literally take those guys out of the game and those guys not to be take shots. And, because the thing is, the Lawyer, Smith, they're not great at getting open themselves. Like, their way to get open is by Zach Edey getting double teamed and them and Zach Edey finding them or somebody else making the extra pass. So, yeah, they couldn't find ways to get those guys open. And it really hurt Purdue. To only take 7 threes in a game of 2024 is beyond shocking. And yeah, the game plan Matt Painter and that team had going in was, Hurley and them ran circles around Matt Painter and the Purdue coaching staff.
And we could see why Matt Painter's lost a lot of big tournament games. We could see why he's lost a lot of big tournament games. No adjustments. Just rely on your best player to do everything. Not tell your team, all right, we're down 16 points. We got to start shooting the ball. We got to start dumping it inside. That's not going to win us the game. Nope, no adjustments. And that's why Purdue lost. That's why they lost. They lost pretty convincingly. They lost by 15 points because of the lack of adjustments of Matt Painter. But circling back to UConn, we got to talk about Dan Hurley, second straight national title. And the big question is right now, is Dan Hurley the best coach in the country? Is Dan Hurley the best coach in the country? And I'm going to say yes. I think it's close between him and Bill Self, but I'm going to say yes. I am. Because look at how dominant this team has been the last few years. And look at where he took this program. This program in 2018 was in the worst shape it had been since Calhoun took it over. Ollie ran this program into the ground. Ollie did a terrible job after he won a national championship. He was horrible after he won a national title. This program hit rock bottom in 2018. And Dan Hurley, he took a program that was 14-18, four games under 500 in 2018. And he has now built it to the best program in college basketball right now. And I think right now, I'm definitely taking Dan Hurley over any coach. He gets it. He connects to the players. And the thing about it is, which no other coach in the country can be, he could be tough on them, and the players respect it. They respect it. They don't transfer out. They don't leave. Outside of Diarra, who's transferred out the last few years, 2 years? Nobody. They respect him. That's the thing. They have so much respect for Dan Hurley. Yes, you could say, Patino because of the history and everything, but Patino called out his team in the middle of the season. I know it worked, and they won a bunch of games in a row, but Patino called out his team in the middle of the season. I just think the way the players respond to Hurley, the way this team plays, to me, there's not a better coach right now than Dan Hurley.
Yeah, I'm with you. You talk about 18, and I remember Nova came in there in January. They were down 20. UConn was down 22 at the half. They hit UConn at 2 threes, go about on my 16, and they start doing the UConn chant. And that's where I think I turned my dad. I'm like, this is the lowest point we've been at. Like, we were doing the UConn chant down 16 at home against Villanova. And yeah, to see where we are now, like, again, 18, 19, I never thought we'd be back at this point. I thought, you know, I'm like, all right, at least I thought UConn went 2 national championships when I've been alive. I never thought we'd get back to this day. It's awesome. You know, that first year Hurley was here, we're 16-17. We finished in 8th or 9th in the American. Now we're back in the Big East, literally doing what Nova did, you know, a couple years ago, just running this conference. So, yeah, he's the best coach in the country now. Yeah, you could say Self is up there. You know, like at Kansas, he's won 2, but he's had some big disappointments in the tournament as well. Yeah, Rick Pitino's another one. Again, that was UConn's toughest.
Oh, it was. Could you imagine if they let St. John's in the tournament? They might have been that team. They might have been that team that made that run. Hey, if they're in different regions, maybe we get St. John's making that run all the way to the Final Four. You never know. Yeah, that was UConn's toughest game of the entire postseason. It just shows you the committee had no idea what they were thinking, not putting St. John's in. Because that was a great game. I was there. That was a great game. St. John's was outstanding. Their Danish Jenkins was phenomenal. St. John, I'm telling you, if St. John's got into this tournament, I guarantee you they're winning at least two. They're at least getting to the second weekend, I think. Yeah, same with Seton Hall. I think Seton Hall was too. This postseason, the Big East definitely proved that they were a top three conference in college basketball, and they were completely screwed by the committee.
Yeah, they absolutely were. It was ridiculous, and I wish Hurley said something to the committee guy when he's standing next to him on the podium on a Monday night. I wish he did say something about the Big East. That would be funny. Yeah. The Big East. Big 12, Big East just canceled their the series that they've had the last couple of years after next year. So that's gonna hurt the conference if they can't find like a Big 12, Big East battle, something like that again. But yeah, you know, Seton Hall should have been in. I will bring when we get to Kentucky, I'm gonna bring up how a lot of this could have changed if the committee went a different direction. I'll save it when we talk Kentucky here coming up.
Gotcha,
but it's wild. This back-to-back thing, I think going back-to-back in this era is much tougher than what Florida did, what UNLV did, what Duke did, because those teams, you know, Florida, that was right at the beginning, one and done, right before it. Duke and UNLV, all those guys stayed 3-4 years. UConn, this is all transfer portal. Like, it's almost, you know, it's like every kid now is on a one-year contract, and you could just leave whenever you want and all that. So, like, to keep your guys together and what they lost, this is the most impressive one. You know, look, are they maybe the best team of all time? They're at the table, but a guy like Dan Hurley coaching, I'd put up against anybody because boy, I think we'd have a chance against any of them.
Yeah, that leads me to my next point. Where does this UConn team rank of all time? Where does this UConn team rank with the great teams of all time? I don't think personally they're as good as Florida or as good as Duke, definitely not as good as Duke in the early 90s or even as good as Florida in 06 and 07. But it was college basketball was much different when Duke won it. It was even different when Florida won it. So, I mean, I think this was more difficult because of the transfer portal. But that's why you got to give Dan Hurley so much credit because of how it's like a family. It's like a family. He could yell at the guys. But it doesn't even matter because they're going to come back to him. Like a lot of coaches, if they coach like Hurley coach, I think anybody coach like Hurley did in the country, they just transfer out. They would just they would get out. They'd leave. They wouldn't want to do it. But the guys want to do it here because they know at the end there's a good chance that they're going to win a national championship. That's why they stay. We're at a point now where Gino is more afraid to coach his kids hard than Hurley is because Gino hasn't won in. Eight or 9 years, and Gino's more afraid of kids transferring from his program than Hurley is from his. It's just the way I think this is more impressive. I don't think this team is as good as those Florida teams from 06 and 07 or those Duke teams from 91 and 92, just because of the talent, because guys stayed longer in those days. But I think it's more impressive because of the way, because of the way college basketball is, with the transfer portal, with guys leaving early, with even guys not even playing college basketball, playing the G League, he's ran a program that is such a family program, and he has preached such unselfish play that I think what he's done has actually been more impressive than what the other two teams have done, even though I think those other two teams, Florida and Duke, were better.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, Duke, Florida, those guys, those teams had, yeah, they had more talent, you know. Even though this UConn starting five, they could probably all get drafted, you know, like can't try late second, but you know, like that Florida team 06-07 were all first rounders, those starting five. But yeah, you know, it's such a tough era to kind of do it now and to see how impressive it was, for them to be able to do it the way that they did. And just, you know, like they were more dominant than any of those teams were, you know, though, like it, what they did in the tournament. You know, I think this team would beat the 2015 Kentucky team. I know that team kind of choked it to Wisconsin down the stretch in the Final Four that was undefeated going up to that. But yeah, you know, you mentioned Hurley, and yeah, Hurley's very, you know, he's the guy's a lunatic on the floor, but behind the scenes, you know, everything you hear, he's very down to earth. He's like, you know, just a great person. There's a reason why Eric Musselman left, because like Eric has that all that energy, but behind the scenes, it's cool. He's got a lot of turnover this season because he pushes him, you know, because the way he's on the court is the way he's off the court. That's why he never stays anywhere more than 5-6 years, because yeah, he just rubs a lot of people the wrong way. Like, Hurley doesn't do that.
Hurley's completely different off the court. He cares about the players probably more than anybody. I think he cares about the players more than any coach in the country. He cares about the players. He's like a second father to him. It's like a second. Him and his wife are like their parents. Yeah. I mean, you see his wife all the time. You see Andrea all the time at the games. It's like he's like a second father to these players. That's why the players stay. He could yell at him. He could scream at him. But the players have so much respect for him. And again, you're not getting that anywhere in the country. And that's why what I think he's done has been more impressive than even what Florida and Duke have done. Because in an era of the transfer portal and an era where guys leave, he's kept this team together.
Yeah. Yeah, he has. You know, like, yeah, they're, you know, 2 years ago after they lost to Mexico State, you kind of had the exits to those guys. You know, Jalen Gaffney went to Florida Atlantic. Corey Floyd went to Providence. Akoga Cook went to West Virginia. Might be missing one more. I think that was it. Yeah, maybe missing one more guy.
Did Akoga Cook go to Georgetown or West? Did you go to Georgetown?
Oh, yeah, Georgetown. And then this year is at West Virginia. My bad. Year early on that. But, you know, like, and he kind of knew that he had to change things after Mexico. Because, like, when he first got here, it was defensive mind. Defense, we're going to win games offensively. After the loss to Mexico State, it was like, okay, we got to go more offensive direction. You know, a couple guys leave, and he really kind of, you know, brought, you know, like Luke Murray is huge in this. Luke Murray is really their offensive mastermind. You know, like, with all these sets. And, again, Keanu Young and Luke Murray, it sounds like they're both going to be back next year. You know, like, That's great, because those two guys have been awesome and keeping the staff together. And then along with Tom Moore, who now has four titles with UConn. But yeah, you know, it's the way they built it, they might not have much talent as Florida or Duke teams or even UNLV teams, but the way the staff kind of puts it together, the camaraderie of this team, I'd put it at that table. Yeah, maybe we don't win, but, you know, the upsets have that. UConn in 99. They're a 9-point dog to Duke, and Duke, they only shocked the world.
Yeah, they did. It started beforehand, but that was their first one, and now they got six, which is crazy. But now moving on to next year, what are their chances? No, they are the favorite to three-peat. Now, what do you think their chances are to three-peat? And I'm saying, as long as Hurley's there, I know there's a good chance. I know they're going to lose Castle. I know they're going to lose Klingon. I know they're going to lose Newton. I know they're going to lose Spencer, and the only guy who probably is going to come back is Caravan. But I'm telling you, I still think they got a really, really, really good chance at 3P because of the coach they have. And to me, in college sports, instead of pro sports, yes, it's about the team to a point, but you got to have that superstar. You got to have that. You know, you saw it with the Patriots when Tom Brady left. The thing completely fell off. I mean, you saw even Andy Reid. He's a great coach and the culture is great everywhere. He sets the culture. But the problem is when he doesn't have Patrick Mahomes, he's never won a championship. In college basketball, it's all about the culture. Look at Alabama with Nick Saban winning all those national championships. Look at Alabama. Look at Coach K for years at Duke. The players don't mean as much in college sports as the coaches do. And as long as Dan Hurley's here, UConn will always be a contender to win the national championship year in and year out. So I know they're losing a lot, but I think they got a very, very good chance to three-peat.
Yeah, you know, they're going to be up there. I know everybody's got Duke as a favorite because they're bringing in seven top 20 kids, but Preston don't
win. Please. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. You know, John Shire's trying to, you know, John Shire's trying to put an all-star team together. Well, let's see what he is, because he's not half of what Dan Early is as a head coach. Not even close.
No, absolutely not. And, you know, only being that he's a T by three without four of their best players is very eye-opening that they would win by three and then you lose 11 seed NC State in the Elite Eight.
Who got beat pretty handily in the semifinals. Yeah.
Yeah, they did. So
he didn't just lose once to them. He lost twice to them.
Twice.
In tournament play.
Matter 3 weeks.
Yeah.
They lost in the tournament, you know, AC tournament. So not a great look there from Shire. We'll see what they do. You know, we'll see how all those freshmen do, but they got a chance. You know, Diarra's, he has his COVID year if he wants it. I would think he's coming back because I think he's got a chance to be the starting point guard next year. Amon Duel, top 30. He's like a he's kind of a combo guard. He had an awesome senior year. If he was going to Duke or Kentucky, he would have been a McDonald's All-American guy, but you know, and he would have probably made a five-star, but I think he was averaged 35 a game this year. So he's somebody I think hopefully, you know, I like Solo Ball. And again, they've hit it really well out in the portal. There's a lot of talent. I would assume most, like if UConn's recruiting you and they got a good role for you, I would assume that for a lot of these guys, you're probably going to take a good look at them. So they're going
to
be
in play with some of these. You have to, because you got a great chance to win a national championship if you go to UConn. I think Cooper Flagg's making a huge mistake playing for John Shire. He comes to UConn. They're the clear favorite to win it next year. That's a huge mistake from him going to play at Duke. He's not playing for Coach K. You're playing for John Shire. You got a much better chance to win. I think you got if you would have went to UConn, you'd clearly have a better chance to win a national championship.
Absolutely. I think both his parents, or especially his mom, I guess, is a huge Duke fan. So he grew up.
He's got to realize. Where'd you see him? Who, Paul?
Yeah, he was walking around the Hall of Fame. He was walking around with his mom, head to toe Duke gear. Like, I guess that fan, they're huge Duke fans.
Coach K is not walking through that door. Okay. Coach K is gone.
I agree.
It's still a good program. It's not the program that it was with Coach K. You chose a good program, but you passed on an elite program.
Yeah, I totally agree. Coach K would not have a selfie room, you know, in the Duke basketball facilities. So
yeah.
That you know, that's why Dan Hurley called them a social media program. That's what they are. So you know, it's one of those programs right now. So yeah, it would have been great to have Cooper. We'll be fine without him. We won't back to back. We got more titles on the Duke. You know, we got six, they got five. We'll be just fine without him. But yeah, it would have been awesome to have him. But yeah, this team's gonna be in contention. And again, who knows? You know, I would hope we're picked first in the Big East, but if they're not, you know, Dan Haley's gonna use that as fuel. You know, they'll find their guy. The last thing too, there's a five star that decommitted from Indiana, Liam McNeil, who's a five star. I know UConn's been talking with him. I think Kansas is the leader. But they're in play. He's kind of like a, because Carabin's good, but like he's probably a more polished guy coming in than like Alex Carabin was. He's like a 6'8" guy who could really knock down threes, and he looks like a pretty good defender. So they're in play with him. So maybe that's an option as well. But yeah, I think they'll be just fine. It'll be tough to three-peat, you know, because nobody's done that since those John Wooden teams, which that was a different era, less game, you know, that, but just you know, countless Hall of Famers that guy had. But yeah, they with Dan Hurley, you know, he's going for that three-peat. You know, he's going to want that. Because I remember last year when they got the rings, he's putting his away because he wants the second one. I assume he's doing the same thing, that he wants the third one.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. He's definitely putting those rings away. And just a phenomenal job by Hurley, another phenomenal job by UConn, another national title. But we got to move on to the biggest news in college basketball, and John Calipari is heading to Arkansas. So I know it's coming to an end in Kentucky, but I'm just a little bit surprised. I was not totally surprised, but a little bit surprised that Cal would leave Kentucky to go to Arkansas, a team that didn't even make the tournament last year. How surprised were you by this?
I was surprised how quick it came that it was Arkansas, because it was like Arkansas kind of late Sunday evening, and all of a sudden, like an hour or two later, it sounded like it was a done deal. Him and the AD haven't got along in years. Him and Mark, you remember 3 years ago that summer, Mark Stoops was like, we're a football school, and him and Cal got in a fight over it, like, you know. And Cal burned a lot of bridges with the top donors in that program. Like, the top donors, the boosters, like, they did not like him. He really well worn out his welcome there. And if he did not have a $33 million buyout, he would have been fired. You know, they would have got rid of him, but they did not. Because the thing is, if you don't like somebody, why would you give them $33 million go away? You know, like I think that's why they kept them. So he was flirting with Ohio State, it sounded like. It sounded like he was talking to USC. The Arkansas one came up, and he's friends with the Tyson family, the chicken nugget, I guess he's friends with them. So, you know, they're giving a nice NIL package. He's getting $7 million a year. So I think for him, it was time. You know, Cal, they were done with him because, you know, when he wins, he's always been, you know, see, when you start downing him, you know, and he wins, he's in those press conferences, he's like, you know, see, I was right. You got to listen to me, you know, all that. And when he loses, it's never on him. It's on everybody else. Or he goes to all his NBA guys. Like, I put these guys in the league,
The ego is just massive. Oh, yeah. He comes across the really nice guy and stuff, but that ego is massive, massive with John Calipari. It is a massive ego with John Calipari. And you were talking about, you know, all the NIL money, how it's going to help in recruiting. The big question is with him going to Arkansas, can he win a title at Arkansas? And I'm going to say no. I'm going to say no because, you know, he's won one title with Anthony Davis. I think he can get to a Final Four. I wouldn't doubt that. I know he hasn't been to a Final Four in almost a decade, but he can get to a Final Four. I don't think he can win a title with Arkansas. I don't think he's one of those coaches that can win a title with multiple schools. I think he won that title because of how – and he's an outstanding recruiter. I think he's a little bit of an overrated head coach. He definitely is an overrated head coach, but he's an outstanding recruiter, and he recruited a great team in 2012 that won a national title. But I don't think so. I don't think he can win one with – I think he can get to a Final Four, maybe even a national championship game. I don't think he could win one at Arkansas.
Yeah, I think he can get to a Final Four. Now, the thing is, if he embraces the portal more, then I think he can. Now, after his press conference that they lost to Oakland, he's kind of said, we're not going to change our ways because I change all these young freshmen's life. Like, they're not going to go to the draft anyways, but they're all five stars. But it sounds like it's only Cal that gets them in the league, which another ego thing for Cal, thinking he's the one. But if he uses the portal and brings in a lot of juniors and seniors and kind of mixes it, like, again, you have some freshmen, but you also have the upperclassmen, then I think they can. Arkansas has got the history. They won two back in the 90s with Nolan Richardson, or won one. One or two.
They won one. They got to a final. Yeah. They got to the final the next year. And they did. And listen, with Musselman, they did get to two straight Elite Eights.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like Musselman really got that program kind of back up from the ground. He just rubbed a lot of people the wrong way at the end. And he just wears out his welcome. And,
taking his shirt off after games and everything.
Yeah, they don't like that down there. You know, they liked it when you're winning. They don't like that when you're losing. You know, they don't like that. So, So for Cal, I think he can. The thing is, will he change his ways? Is he too stubborn? You know, and we're going to find out. Because, again, this is the same – because he's not a good X's guy. This is the same guy who played Devin Booker 18 minutes in the Final Four games with Wisconsin. Look what Devin Booker's become.
Oh, my God. That is awful. That is terrible.
Yeah.
Oh, and that's the thing. In big games, the guy's not that good. I mean, loses that. He should have won that game against Bill Self in 08. I mean, all right.
Yeah.
14, I think that was one of his better coaching jobs to get him there against UConn. But then 2015, he's undefeated, and he doesn't even win the national title.
No. I can't even – he was – even though that was – Bo Ryan's best Wisconsin team by far, but that team, they had no he had so much talent on the team. It was an indictment that they lost that because he had Karl-Anthony Towns, he had Cauley Stein was on that team too, I think. Like, that team was so loaded. Yeah, that was an indictment on Cal for not winning a title. So, yeah, he could win in Arkansas. But again, if he changes his ways, I don't know if he will or not. I guess we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, but dude, yeah, we will. We will. Yeah, it'll be tough. It'll definitely be tough for him to win it. But they're gonna have success. He's a good coach. They'll have success. But I think it's gonna be tough for them to win a national title. But now the big question is what's next for Kentucky? Who's gonna take that job? I think the two guys. I mean, we're gonna forget about Hurley. He's not leaving. You heard that question after the game about the potential of him leave going. Don't worry, Hurley's not leaving. I think the one guy, if they wanted a guy, it'd be Billy Donovan. But I don't think Billy Donovan's gonna take the job. I think it's gonna be Scott Drew. I think Scott Drew should be the hire because he won a national title. Kentucky is a bigger job than Baylor. Baylor has not been out of the round of 32 since they've won that national title in 2021. My choice would be Scott Drew. Because Scott Drew, we all know he might have went to the worst situation ever in college basketball with Baylor, because you're obviously aware of what happened with Baylor before you got there. I mean, just horrific things that happened there at Baylor. And he built that program into a national champion. I mean, he's done a great job at Baylor. I think if he can get the resources, if he could be in a place like Kentucky with all the resources they have, he could really elevate himself up to that, you know, top three level of a college basketball coach if he could win at Kentucky. That's why Scott Drew of Baylor would be my choice.
Yeah. Right now it sounds like there's an offer on the table for Scott Drew, and he's got the next 24 hours or so to make the decision. Because I know Billy, last year when Texas opened, Billy Donovan, it sounded like Texas, he would come back for Kentucky. There might have been like one more school he would come back to the college game from. But I think because the Bulls are going to be in the play-in, you win that, you get out of that, you go to the actual playoffs. That's another two, three weeks. Kentucky can't wait that long.
It's a tough spot for Billy Donovan, though, because you look at the Bulls roster. I know they got Colby White. That's their one bright spot. But you look at the rest of that roster, that's not a championship roster. He goes to Kentucky. Again, he gets back into the college game. Already won two national titles, and he's been in the SEC. I know it's been a long time since he's been in the SEC, but he's been in the SEC. He could really elevate himself, but that's a tough spot for Billy Donovan to be, a tough decision for him.
Yeah, it is, because if he does get fired, he's not getting a third opportunity in the NBA either. So it sounds like if he does get fired, he might wait out for Texas next year if Rodney Terry doesn't do well again. You know, so if Rodney Terry can't go on a run. So, you know, so Billy might, you know, it depends. If it's on, because Scott Drew, the thing is, he's more of an introvert, you know, like he's more private. He's very religious, it sounds like. You know, that's kind of, you know, I think they're a Methodist school down there at Baylor. And the thing is, too, because at Kentucky, you got to be more like, when you're the head coach at Kentucky, you got to be more of like a cultural figure. I don't think Scott Drew fits that, you know, like he's not the guy, you know, that's the only thing. And if you go through Kentucky's message boards, they don't even want Scott Drew. That's how delusional that fan base
is. Yeah, that's delusional. Come on.
Yeah.
It's like the one coach on that list outside of Billy Donovan that's won a national title.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. So, if it's not Scott Drew, I think the next guy is Chris Beard, which morality-wise, I think that's not the prettiest hire, but it's not
a good coach, but he's been bouncing around all over the place since he got to that national. I know he had to leave. He got fired at Texas, but he's looking to leave Ole Miss already.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like so. If Kentucky would open, so that would be the next one. But yeah, I think Scott Drew's the right. I think Scott Drew would be the guy. He's, you know, his father coached up at Valparaiso in Indiana, so he is from that area. So he turned down Louisville. It sounds like Kentucky's gonna be a tough one for him, but I think that'd be a really good hire for Kentucky. But I want to go back to this. So the carousel, this thing really got crazy because Indiana State knocked off SMU in the NIT. SMU blew a 15-point lead in the second half to Indiana State. SMU then fired their head coach, Rob Lanier. That triggered USC's Andy Enfield to head to SMU. That triggered Musselman to head to USC. Then Cal to Arkansas. So SMU is like the team here.
Andy Enfield leave USC for SMU? That's what I don't get.
And he's going to get fired next year. So one of those, you know. So when like Shaka, like, yeah, you're probably gonna get fired.
Kind of a lesser version of Cal though at Kentucky, where he probably felt like he was gonna get fired, so that's why he went to Arkansas.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, same thing. So SMU really got this thing going, and the crazy thing is if Indiana State makes a tournament, SMU didn't play them. Maybe they knock off somebody else. So the committee really, really kind of opened this thing up. Cause yeah, Indiana, you know, SMU opened the doors for all this thing to happen, which is crazy that it was SMU that did it. But, so yeah, though, that's crazy that SMU kind of just opened the floodgates out for this carousel. But, yeah, I think Scott Drew should be the hire here, but if not, it's probably Chris Bearden. I don't know who else they call. And I kind of want to see like Drew and Beard not call, you know, turn it down, because I don't know where Kentucky would go next, and it would be funny. Be funny if Pitino took it, but I don't think they're going after him.
No, I mean, you mean his son, right?
No, the older
guy. Rich. Oh, well, no, he's not taking. He's staying home at St. John's. He's staying home at St. John's, and now watch out for them in the coming years. I think they're actually going to turn it around. I think they had a really good. Because I always say about St. John's, who knows what happens if they made the tournament this year? You really don't know what happened with them, because that was a team that could have made that. Definitely, I feel like, because they went total. They beat UConn, their toughest game in the Big East tournament and the NCAA tournament. So you never know what happened with them.
No, you don't. No, that's definitely a team I probably would have had at least my second weekend, the way they were playing. They were playing really well down the stretch.
Absolutely. So things are heating up in the NBA. We got teams jockeying for playoff positioning. But before we talk about that, we are going to hear from our friends at JPEG Financial and Shamrock Home Inspections.
Do you have a 401k and some savings for future retirement, but don't even know if it's enough to live off of? How much is enough? How often are you thinking about it? The team at JPEG's Financial Group can help set your mind at ease. We specialize in creating strategies in the planning and managing of your financial, educational, and investment needs. We help clients pursue their investment goals with sound financial strategies. You deserve a personal, tailored plan. Lasting, meaningful, and open relationships are the foundation of our practice. You've worked hard for your money and should feel confident in your investment choices as you make decisions for your financial future. Your goals are our goals. We are dedicated to your needs and hopes for your future. Visit our website and give us a call at 860-430-5397. Securities offered through Raymond James Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Raymond James Financial Services Advisors, Inc. JPEG's Financial Group, LLC is not a registered broker-dealer and is independent of Raymond James Financial Services. JPEG's Financial Group is located at 78 Eastern Boulevard, Glastonbury, Connecticut.
There's no bigger investment than home ownership. And to make sure the house is up to your standards, you need a professional to look it over. Brian Flanagan from Shamrock Home Inspections is a licensed home inspector and a member of the Connecticut Association of Home Inspectors. Brian was a contractor for over 15 years, so he knows how homes should be constructed and how mechanicals should work.
What makes me a good home inspector was the 20 years that I was a home improvement person, doing all the different repairs that I have done and what other people have done wrong that I had to go out and fix. So I have a pretty quick eye on seeing what's right and what's wrong. Before you move, call Shamrock Home Inspections.
Before you make the biggest investment of your life, call Brian Flanagan from Shamrock Home Inspections at 860-268-2566 or visit shamrockhomeinspectionct.com.
All righty, so things are heating up in the NBA. I think the big story right now is that 16 in the Western Conference. The Lakers last night losing to the Warriors. They pretty much played their way out of that. It looks like we're probably going to get the Lakers and Warriors. Could be in the first round of the play-in tournament. Could be that first game in the play-in tournament, that 9-10 game we can get from the Lakers with the Lakers and Warriors. But really, this sixth seed is down to three teams. It's down to Phoenix, it's down to New Orleans, and it's down to your Kings. And right now, New Orleans has the number six seed in the Western Conference. And and there's a huge game on Thursday night, actually, between your Kings and New Orleans. And really, if the Kings win that game, if New Orleans wins that game, I think they got a great shot at getting that seed. I think they got a great shot at getting the sixth seed in the West. And I look through the schedule. I look at New Orleans' schedule. You got the Kings, you got the Warriors and the Lakers. You look at Phoenix's schedule. They got the Clippers. They got the Kings and the Timberwolves. I think Phoenix is going to have to be in the play-in tournament. Who would have thought, too, Phoenix would be in the play-in tournament when they went out and got Bradley Beal and they paired him with Kevin Durant and Devin Booker? Who would have thought Phoenix would be playing in the play-in tournament? So I think Phoenix is going to get like the seventh seed. I do think that your Kings lose to the Pelicans on Thursday night. I do think your Kings get the eight, and I got the Pelicans. I got the Pelicans getting the number six seed in the Western Conference.
Yeah, I'm With you, I think I get the Pelicans as well. Because I will tell you this, because the Pelicans and Kings have played four times this year. One of those games has been close. The Pelicans have won all four. The Kings have really struggled against New Orleans. And, you know, so, yeah, that Kings blew another 20-point lead last night. That's
the eighth or ninth this year. So. Get OKC.
Yeah. Yeah, so they did it against your Knicks, too, last week.
I know. They were up big, and the Knicks ended up beating them like 15. They ended up beating them like 15.
Yeah, it's back to watching first halves only for me before I lose my mind the last couple weeks. So they did it. The Kings done it themselves. I'm with you. I got the Pelicans. They got the Phoenix the other night, which is huge. And then, you know, they can beat the Warriors. They can kind of split there with the Lakers. The Suns last night, just what are they? Where they opened that game down 35-4, I think it was. Yeah, like, I think just
so. How do you start that way? How do you start down 35-4? Within Beal, Booker, and Durant played. That's shocking.
Yeah, that's that was bad. So, and their schedule's not easy. They got the Clippers again tonight, and they have Kings, Timberwolves. Like, I don't see the Suns get. I don't see the Suns being able to get up to that 60. So I'm with you. I think New Orleans takes care of business and gets a 60.
I agree. Yep, I got the Pelicans getting the 60 in the West. Now the race for the number one seed is interesting because you got Minnesota and Denver tied, and they play tonight. They play tonight for that number one seed. They play tonight, and then you got New Orleans one game. Oklahoma City one game behind them. But I think it's going to be Denver again. I think Denver gets the number one seed in the West. I think the West runs through Denver. They got home court advantage throughout the Western Conference. That is bad news for anybody in the Western Conference, because I even thought if they even got the 3 seed, they would clearly be the best team in the West. I think they clearly are, because Murray's been in and out of the lineup at times this year. But I think they're clearly the best team in the West. And I look at their schedule, Minnesota tonight, San Antonio and Memphis. I think Denver's getting the number one seed in the Western Conference.
Yeah, I'm with you. They're starting to really play well. Like, kind of, you know, really in the month of March, they really started to play well and really kind of turn it on. And kind of, because like they were kind of hovering around 3-4 seed there for a while. And then they've really come on there to kind of get back up in the conversation for a one seed. And yeah, I think they're going to get it. I think they do knock off New Orleans at home, or I mean Minnesota at home tonight. And then you got the Spurs and the Grizzlies, who are two very poor teams right now, who, you know, two of the worst teams in the league. So if they win tonight, they take care of those two. Denver gets a one seed throughout the Western Conference.
Yeah, and again, that's bad news for anybody in the West. The only saving grace you had for teams, that's why this game for Minnesota, even though they're not going to have Karl Anthony Towns, is massive. It's a massive game for Minnesota, because you want to have that. You want to be playing. If you somehow get to the Western Conference Finals, you want that home court advantage against the Nuggets. And if you don't, your chances are very slim of winning. Because this is, to me, not only do I think this is the best team in the West, I know the Celtics are playing really well. I think this is the best team in the NBA because they have beaten the Celtics twice. And let me tell you, Jason Tatum, he ain't on Nikola Jokic's level. So I think the Nuggets are the best team in the NBA. So if they get that number one seed, that is bad news for anybody in the Western Conference. But now we'll move on to the 6th seed in the East. And right now, Indiana has the number 6 seed. The Sixers are making a push. They have won 6 in a row with Joel Embiid. That's a danger. The funny thing about the Sixers is you don't want them in the first. You don't want to get them in the first round. You don't want to get them in the first. Unless the Celtics get them. Because if the Celtics play the Sixers, Celtics are going to beat them. Celtics are going to beat the Sixers. I know that. But if anybody else, I think even if the Bucks get them in that 2-7 matchup, it could be a repeat of what happened last year with the Bucks when they played the Heat. They very easily could get eliminated. But looking at the Sixers, they're hot. You got the Pacers. Heat won a big game last night in Atlanta. But I do think, ultimately, I actually think Indiana gets it, because they play Cleveland and they play Atlanta. I think Indiana is the team that ends up getting the 6th seed. As a Knicks fan, and potentially with them right now being the 3 seed, I am definitely rooting for. I definitely want to play Indiana. I know there's history between the two, but that was years ago with Reggie Miller. I definitely want. I know Indiana won. It got to the finals of the play-in tournament. They'll be tough, but I definitely would rather play Indiana than Miami and Philly right now. So I do think Indiana is going to get the number 6 seed, and the Sixers and the Heat are going to be in the play-in tournament.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think the Pacers kind of figure out a way to hold on that 6 seed. You know, tonight will be tough one with Cleveland, as I know, kind of slim shot, but the way the Bucks are playing, Cavs can kind of sneak up there and try to kind of get the division. Or no, actually, yeah, I think they actually Bucks just, I think, clinched it. But I think Cleveland's been good. You know, Cleveland's been playing better. And Indiana's been a fun team to watch. And the Sixers now getting Joel Embiid back has been huge for them. And, yeah, like, Philly can be a dangerous team kind of early on in the playoffs. And, you know, I think the Heat right now are kind of just coast. You know, I don't think the Heat are going to get that six seed as well. So, yeah, Indiana has been playing pretty well this month. I know schedule hasn't been great because they played the Nets twice. They got the Raptors on the road, and they did beat the Heat the other night as well. So I do think Indiana holds on. They've been fun to watch this year. And, yeah, that Indiana-Knicks series, that would be a very contrasted styles. Indiana, which very offensive, bad team, and obviously a Tom Thibodeau team of defense for, you know, defensive kind of want to play in the low to, you know, mid-hundreds. So Indiana wants to get games in the 120. So be a fun series.
It definitely would. And we'll wrap up talking about those Knicks and that race for the number two seed in the East. You look at the Knicks, they got the Celtics on Thursday night. They got the Nets and the Bulls at home they finish off with. You look at the Bucks, and you saw last night with the Bucks with Giannis getting hurt. So I think there's a good chance Giannis doesn't play for the entire regular season. And then you still got Orlando in that mix. But I do think Orlando loses at Philly in one of their remaining games. So I do think that eliminates them from it. But I do think they actually beat the Bucks twice. And I think the Knicks win two of their last three. And I think the Knicks wind up with the number two seed in the East.
Yeah. I'm like, I think the Knicks will as well, because the Celtics, they've been kind of sending some guys pulling some guys early. How much do the Celtics really don't need it? And then you got the Bulls still as well. And then the Nets, who just, they've been, Nets have been horrible this year. So yeah, like the Knicks really should, or obviously still going to Boston to be tough to go on the road there. But yeah, the Knicks could wind up going 3-0 and taking care of business there. And that Friday night, last Friday, that Bulls game's going to hurt not getting that one, but it could potentially hurt you. But yeah, I think the Knicks will definitely wind up with that two seed. And I wish this Knicks team was healthy, because I think they have the best shot to knock off the Celtics in the Eastern Conference, but they could still do it. I think it's going to be very tough, but if they were healthy, I think the Knicks would really do it and win the East. But it's unfortunate that the injuries piled up in the second half.
Yeah, they definitely, if they had Randle, I think they're definitely top three. I still think the Bucks are better, because if you're drafting a team, you're going to take Dame and Giannis over Brunson. But it could be arguable the way Brunson's played this year. You might be able to take Brunson over Lillard, but I think it would still be the Bucks. But I definitely say they'd be top three if they were healthy.
Yeah. I just, with the Bucks, they're under 500 with Doc. Like, and they lost three straight games early in the month against, they were double-digit favorites. Like, I can't trust Doc, and I can't trust his team. So I'll take Tom Thibodeau team, even with the injuries. And I think Jalen Brunson could put a team on his back and win a game. And David Tenzo too has been coming on as well.
Yeah, Brunson definitely can. But we'll be talking a lot of NBA in the next couple months, because the play-in tournament begins next week. So we'll be talking a lot of NBA in the next 2 months. So definitely be tuned in for that. But we're going to wrap the show talking about some baseball, and the Yankees, they're off to a really good start. They started 10-2. And really, everything's been working for them. Even the starting pitching this week with Cortez, with Rondon last night, Heels, he's pitched pretty well too. Stroman's pitched well. So the starting pitching's been good. The offense, Soto's just been such a great addition to this team. You've seen Stan start to get out. He had the grand slam on Sunday. Judge has been not great, but still been pretty good. Volpe has really been good too. So you're seeing this offense improved. Pitching's been good. Bullpen's been good. They're pretty much just been solid everywhere.
Yeah, they have. It's been a really nice start to the year. Sander right now kind of looking like he might go on one of those like 2-week tears that he's famous for, because as you mentioned, like Judge hasn't totally looked locked in yet. You know, Soto had that hot start down there in Houston, beginning of Arizona, and he's started to kind of cool off a bit. But, you know, he's still batting up in the 340s right now early on. But, yeah, you know, Anthony Volpe, like his approach at the plate's been so much better. He's such a great defender. He's been awesome, you know. And then, you know, you hopefully like an Austin Wells gets it going. But, yeah, the pitching staff so far, without Cole, they've been good. which has been great to see. I know Nestor struggled a little bit, but he looked really good the other night against Miami, so hopefully that's a sign to come. Rodon pitched pretty well last night. And then, yeah, like I like Keel a little wild at times, could be kind of inconsistent, but, you know, he's somebody, too, that if he's on, he could be really tough to hit. So, yeah, so far, 10-2, off to a really nice start. And, yeah, let's see if the team can keep it up. You know, Cleveland's gotten off to a nice start. They'll play Toronto again coming up in the next week. So we'll see. Hopefully take care of business tonight. And again, like against that Astros series, the first series, they didn't punt on a finale. You know, they didn't punt on a series finale like they usually do. They went out there and got the sweep. So hopefully that's approach again, because you should bury this Miami team, which has been awful so far.
Absolutely, and they should sweep them tonight. And then going to Cleveland this week, you got Schmidt against Carrasco. You got Heel pitching on Saturday. You got Cortez pitching Sunday. I think this team is definitely taking 2 out of 3. I think they go to Cleveland and they win another series. I got them taking 2 out of 3 in Cleveland.
Yeah, they should take 2 out of 3. It's unfortunate Cleveland lost Shane Bieber to Tommy John. Seen a lot of that this year, but. Yeah, you know, but this is an Indian or Guardian team that you should still be able to get. You know, so far the schedule hasn't been too daunting, but you know, they get the White Sox again tonight here. But yeah, it's a team you should be able to take 2 out of 3 against this weekend. Well, hopefully the lineup can use the go. McKenzie could be pretty good. That might be a tough one. Going to against Luis Steele, but I expect this Yankee team, yeah, to take 2 out of 3 in Cleveland this weekend.
Yeah, I think they do. And we'll wrap up talking about the Red Sox. The Red Sox are off to a surprising start. They've started their season 7-4. I think the big story has been the pitching. The pitching has been really good, even though, let's be honest, some of these lineups they face, especially with the Angels and the A's, are not good. You saw what happened when they faced a really good lineup yesterday. They ended up losing 7-1. So the pitching has been really good. And Tommy O'Neill, 6 home runs to start the season. And that's picked things up with that. And he picked up the slack with Devers struggling. But the big question of the Red Sox is, how long can they keep this up? I think Cora, again, will keep him in it maybe, you know, June, July. They'll beat the teams they should beat, but I still think this team, there's no way this team makes the playoffs. And I wouldn't even be surprised they're even in it at the trade deadline. I know they got off to a hot start, but you saw yesterday. You saw what this Red Sox team is when they play a really good team.
Yeah, tough one yesterday, the home opener. You know, I know a lot of emotion in that ballpark with honoring Tim Wakefield and that 04 World Series team. Yep. But, yesterday was pretty ugly to kind of just lay an egg. I know Duran missed, dropped like a fight, he dropped the ball there in the outfield, and that led to a couple of runs. And then you lose Trevor Story for the year as well, which is unfortunate. So that's a huge loss in your middle of the order. So, you know, and now Pervetta is going to be probably out till, with the elbow issue. So I don't know when he's going to come back. So that's going to hurt your rotation here as well. So, yeah, yesterday, for how good of a West Coast trip you had, kind of a bummer the way you played yesterday. You lose 7-1, but it's been a surprising start. Yeah, it's how long can this team keep it up? It's going to be tough. Tyler O'Neill's been a nice pickup, as you mentioned, the 6 home runs so far. But, yeah, this Boston Red Sox team, the pitching staff's done well, but hopefully they could, you know, for them to kind of keep it together enough. But, yeah, it was a nice start. Yesterday was a big damper, but you got the Angels again, and then you got Cleveland coming up, and then Pitt. Like, the rest of the schedules, I know Cleveland, Pittsburgh got off to a nice start, but those are series you could win.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah, definitely. Those, yeah, Cleveland, Pittsburgh. Yeah, no, as I said, they could stay in this thing for the first couple months. I just don't think they have the talent on this team offensively. And even though their pitching has been really good, Houck's off to a great start. But really, outside of Tanner Houck and Bello, who really has potential in that rotation? Really nobody. So I just don't think this team has the roster to stay in it for a while. I just don't. I think this team is going to be out of it by probably – the middle to the end of July. I just think they're going to be in last place. They're going to be, I know Tampa's not playing that well, but I think they're going to be out of it by the middle to the end of July.
Yeah. I wouldn't be shocked by that either. If that happens. Yeah. Cause again, it's unfortunate. You're seeing a ton of pitching injuries. Like if a Bell or a Tanner Houck gets injured too, like, you know, yeah, there's not a lot of depth there, and they've been talking, French and they're talking about trading Jansen. Like, it's a team too. Yeah, if they start falling off June, July, probably a team that's going to sell some pieces. So, yeah, I you know, probably I wouldn't be surprised either. By June or July, they start to kind of fade a little bit and kind of fall back into the pack.
Yeah, I definitely think that very easily can happen. But that's going to wrap it up on Sports Talk with R&J. For Justin D'Onofrio, I'm Steve Risser. We will be back next week talking about the NBA play-in tournament, the Yankees and Red Sox, and any NFL news that comes our way. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Hello, my name is Joe McGuire. I'm the president of Clovercrest Media Group. And here at CMG, we have a wide variety of podcasts, including sports shows like Keys to the City, The Roll Call, Throwing Jabs, All Four Downs, and Jawing About the G-Men. And great true crime shows like Sticky Meek, Crimes and Consequences, Ivy League Murders, and Bird, The Unsolved Murder of David Eichmann. You can find all these podcasts and so much more by visiting clovercrestmedia.com.